This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. The pandemic has upended so many things, and one of those things is the arts world, and in particular, the stages and organizations in Indiana that many people enjoyed frequenting before things took a turn. What does the future look like for these institutions and outlets of creativity, and how have they been able to endure throughout the pandemic? With us to talk more about how traditional show presentations have been affected, as well as audience numbers, is Domenica Bongiovanni, arts and creativity reporter for the Indy Star. If you have any questions or comments for the show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Welcome, Domenica. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Let's start with, you know, a lot of things shut down initially during the pandemic. And as someone who covers the arts, how did that impact your work?
Oh my gosh. I think the biggest thing is just seeing artists and arts leaders and, you know, people who work in production and kind of around productions, and you know how hard they're working, and all of a sudden they have to worry about their job. And not only that, but you're seeing what they built that was just totally interrupted. They didn't know when it would come back. Obviously looking at the economics of it for our city, and, you know, kind of looking at this longer term idea that, you know, we want to create more arts jobs, so that people will be able to move here, see Indiana and Indianapolis as an arts hub, you know, be able to do their work full time. And so when the pandemic came through, it derailed all of this. And I think that, you know, seeing the cancellations from readers' perspectives were really difficult. I think about things like Symphony on the Prairie and in person Yuletide for the symphony, and just knowing that people didn't have this, you know, joy to look forward to. And I think, you know, the online offerings were amazing, and I think groups did a fantastic job kind of switching over to that. But, you know, there is, as everybody says, a reason that we gather together in person, and there's not a substitute for that. So that always was very difficult.
Mm-hmm. And for you as a reporter, did you feel that you had to shift your work from, you know, before it was maybe pleasant in general, stories about the arts and things coming up, and now it was more like the aftermath or what's happening now with a lot of these venues?
Sure. Yeah. You know, one of the reasons that I enjoy covering the arts is because it offers, you know, such a range of emotions, you know, and many of which are a lot of joy at, you know, cool things that are going to happen and really inspiring stories in that. And of course, there's always, you know, difficulties and challenging stories within that. But yeah, the balance definitely shifted to difficult stories and challenging you know, situations as the pandemic happened. And also, I mean, just being a reporter in a newsroom, I mean, we all pull as much weight as we possibly can. And so that also meant covering just about anything across the city that came up last year. And so everybody really pitched in beyond their beat to, you know, just to try and do justice to everything that was happening and, you know, just inform readers and the like.
Mm-hmm. And with the rarity that is arts reporting these days, you know, there's just been so many cuts to newsrooms and things like that. Did you feel with this pandemic at all that it was like, okay, that's the end of arts reporting if this continues?
From a personal standpoint, I guess I had just as many, if not more, stories that I would have, you know, even in a regular year. And a lot of those, I mean, was just the other side of, you know, wait a minute, what if we don't have entertainment? What does this mean? You know, because I think that the arts, I mean, they're civically very important and they tie into the way our city is developed. When you look at like the cultural trail, you know, when you look at policies that are made for economic development that come out of the city county council, you know, from the state, from all of these different directions, you know, conversations about, you know, diversity and anti-racism training and, you know, what we're learning from museums and performances and everything. I mean, the arts are just as involved in this as everything. So I guess I wasn't worried so much that people would think that there wouldn't be a need for arts reporting. I guess that was kind of my thought, is that there was just as much to cover just from the other side of it, you know, with what was missing.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a great point. I think sometimes we sort of stereotype or think like the arts reporting is just going to the theater and writing a review. And there's so much more depth to it with all of these other elements. When you look back before the pandemic hit, are there stories that you were covering that just now it's like that venue is gone?
There were a couple, you know, I guess, you know, there was the Catered Cabaret Theater down in Greenwood, and that one is, and I was so sorry to see them leave because they had kind of expanded like three times within a year or so, or like 14 months. And I mean, there was a real demand for that. And I believe it's now a comedy club. I'm not sure. I think that was kind of recent, but I was sorry to hear that the person who had started that wasn't able to continue that work. And there were, you know, I mean, and this is fortunately, they are not gone and they are still very much with us and waiting to open. But I think about the Can-Can Cinema and Brasserie, who was literally going to open like the week that everything shut down. And I mean, I had toured it. I had written the story. I was just waiting on them to tell me kind of their final date for their grand opening, and everything, you know, shut down right then. And so fortunately, they are still very much with us. Their building is still very much there waiting to open, and they've been doing movies on demand and a lot of outdoor movies as well. So that's one that I'm really looking forward to opening.
Mm-hmm. And how was that transition like for you with covering things in person to now, I'm guessing, some virtual events or outdoor? Is it still sort of the same process?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what I do, I try to dig in beyond the events to connect things to, you know, different facets of life in the city, you know, kind of how I was saying before. So a lot of what I do, you know, was predicated on, I guess, pre-work before events. You know, I used to try and do more of those interviews in person, especially if you are meeting with, you know, somebody where you're wanting a tour of something or you want to see their work. And so sometimes that was, you know, difficult to sit across a room or outside, you know, go outside for like 10 minutes, you know, or to do things on the phone that you think, geez, I wish I could be there, you know, in person, or, you know, spend a little bit more time just in the moment. But, you know, you get more detail that way, but you just kind of have to try and make it work.
Right. Well, as we look forward and ahead with things possibly opening up, you recently wrote a piece about some new outdoor venues. What are some of those new spaces?
Yeah, that was, as I've told people, such a joy to cover compared to last year at this time. I kind of did a combination of things. So in terms of having the outdoor spaces, but also just, you know, organizations that were looking to, you know, had announced a performance outdoors. So I have both of those things in there. A couple of them are, you know, returning and some upgraded. I think of like the Fonseca Theater, you know, they had put together a stage really quickly last year. And so they're just building on that this year. Same with the Hi-Fi, which had put up, you know, a stage in a shipping container last year. And now that shipping container is the bar, and they've actually got a new stage that's been upgraded. The Phoenix Theater has long been working on plans to put up a couple of stages, one in their parking lot and one sort of right next to their building. So they're opening that parking lot stage now. You know, the cabaret and the Arts Council and some folks had been wanting to put together a stage in their alleyway, and they had been working on that, and that's going to open this summer. So there's a lot of them. As I was writing that, they just kind of kept coming, and I was really glad about that.
Do you know if there's any protocols in place for these new spaces or even previous spaces that are reopening?
Most people that I had talked with had, you know, made it really clear that when people are on site, you know, even though you're outside, even though a lot of people are probably vaccinated at this point, that masks were still required and that they were still having social distancing. They're trying to do as touch-free of entry as possible. So, you know, you're not, you know, handing things back and forth a lot, whether that's tickets or, you know, whatnot. So I would think that a lot of that is in place still. Mm-hmm.
And do you think any of these newer outdoor spaces could become something permanent, or are they more of a, like a pop-up?
Oh, yeah. I think that a lot of these are going to be permanent. I think that, you know, the infrastructure that a lot of venues are building, you know, is going to stay. I think some places just, you know, they're pop up because they have to be, you know, I mean, because of, you know, where they're sitting or something like that. But I think a lot of them are going to be permanent just because I think arts leaders, I mean, they're sitting there and they're not expecting, you know, a pandemic to come along where they can't, you know, just enact their business model. So I think that they have recognized this as, you know, a chance to, you know, diversify their portfolio, so to speak, I guess, and, you know, have this option so that heaven forbid anything like this should come down again. You know, they have this option that they can just continue for fun, but also that they can just continue for revenue's sake.
Right, right. I wonder, are any of these organizations still going to continue to do sort of like a hybrid, like online and in person for folks who are just like, I'm not ready to go in person?
I know that they had been thinking about that, you know, a while back. I know the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel, you know, they had built some technological infrastructure to continue doing both. And at, you know, at least as of several months ago, they were planning on continuing that with audiences just because they found out that they would get thousands more people watching, you know, than if they just had the in-person. So I think that they want to continue that sort of, you know, that sort of reach and, you know, see what kind of an opportunity you can have to increase, you know, your patron base for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, taking a little bit of a step back to the art scene as a whole here in Indiana, you mentioned earlier that some places ended up closing. Would you say that as a whole, it's been pretty resilient, or are there any, I don't know, is there any data at this point of who's been able to survive and who hasn't?
I haven't seen specific data on that I can think of. I think it's been pretty resilient overall, just from what's come to me. I think, you know, a combination of, you know, funding that came through, you know, the CARES Act and that, you know, funding for venues. You know, I know that the Arts Council had, you know, really spearheaded a lot, you know, trying to be a resource and trying to, you know, spread out as many dollars to help as possible. I think that it's a testament to the artists and the leaders who work for them that they have also problem solved through this and figured out ways. So we're fortunate that I think most everybody is still with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll continue this conversation with Domenica Bongiovanni right after this break. We're talking about Indiana performing arts survival and return in the midst of a pandemic. If you have any questions or comments, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're continuing our conversation with Domenica Bongiovanni, arts and creativity reporter for the Indy Star. And we're looking at the art scene and how it's been able to survive during the pandemic. Domenica, I want to ask, you know, what do you think the overall morale of the art scene is today at this moment?
I think it's very hopeful, and I do think it's resilient. I don't think that anybody gets into the nonprofit arts sector without, you know, some resilience, you know, in their personality and some experience, you know, under their belt with resilience. You know, I know over conversations over the last year, you know, I could hear in people's voices how difficult things were, and, you know, also that they were, you know, just incredibly determined. And I hear, you know, a lot more hope, and I guess kind of some real toughness and some new toughness even now. Mm-hmm. So, I'm very glad about that.
And I wonder, you know, sometimes the art scene can seem a little maybe stuffy or behind the times in technology. I wonder if this has kind of forced a lot of new technological advances that maybe weren't going to come for a while.
I think so. I've heard some, you know, arts leaders talk about how this has expedited a timeline for things that they had planned, you know, but, you know, as you're kind of just getting through seasons and stuff, you know, you have some stuff on the front burner and some stuff on the back burner. And this definitely moved those technological advances to the front burner. I think, you know, organizations can only get the feedback that they ask for, you know, in the surveys from their patrons. And so to reach, you know, new people, to get honest to goodness feedback, I think is something that will be good that, you know, comes out of this. Because, you know, when you're on even just a Facebook Live and you have people commenting and they're across the country and they say, I just happened upon this thing and, you know, it's really changing my life tonight. I'm so glad that I saw this. It, you know, really brought me up. I think that, you know, that offers an opportunity for them to engage with that person and sometimes to be able to see what they do well that is not immediately available and what is attractive, you know, about what they're doing and how they could shift what they're doing, tweak it to, you know, to bring in some more eyes and to get some more interest. Yeah, I think in that way, there will be some lessons learned there.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely see how you can expand your audience with, offering an online option to a small theater in a town that someone might not have ever happened upon. What have been some of your sort of favorite stories that you've been able to cover this past year?
Oh gosh. I think that, you know, I was glad to be able to, this isn't necessarily a favorite, but it was one that I think was important. And that was to be able to cover, you know, the financial impact on both the performing arts and also museums. And, you know, they're different in how they operate. I was really glad to be able to bring that to readers because I think that, you know, I mainly focus on the nonprofit arts and, you know, it's a different, you know, it's a different field than, than, you know, for-profit arts. And so I think to be able to kind of like bring that understanding to readers, is really important. Certainly, you know, in the middle of this, I did really enjoy, covering all of the new things that they had at the, Harrison Center. You know, there was a slide in there, which I haven't been down a slide in a long time. and it was part of, you know, a multi-million-dollar grant that they got from the Lilly Endowment, as many organizations have, and they're finally unveiling it. And they just had all, I mean, they had a karaoke elevator, they have rooftop tetherball. And so to be able to see, you know, these really super creative things was great. I also, you know, was excited I didn't get to see them in person, but was able to kind of watch a private viewing of the Devil Wears Prada creative a group, the team behind that Broadway bound musical coming to Carmel, and to be able to hear them, you know, explain how they turned, you know, a really great movie and how they're doing, turning that into a really great musical was, fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And that was a real joy to be able to write about and to kind of talk about some of those little like musical techniques that they use, storytelling, all of that. So those were kind of among some of my favorite.
Mm-hmm. And one of the bigger stories to come out of the Indiana arts world during the pandemic, as we switch focus here a little bit, was the Newfields problematic description for a job posting that made national headlines. Was this an important moment of reflection for the arts world in Indiana?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I mean, almost every person that I spoke with said, look, you know, this is happening at Newfields right now, but this is a discussion that's going on at museums and, you know, in arts institutions across the country. And this is, you know, kind of the latest example of that. So, yes, I would say it's very much in the context of, you know, some real self-reflection and a reckoning that's going on in the industry.
Mm-hmm. And have you heard anything from the museum? I mean, have they done enough to remedy the situation, the problematic messaging?
They had released their action plan, which came about 30 days after, you know, that job description became, you know, public, I guess, you know, public to the wider public. And they have, you know, I mean, people that I talked to at the time, I think a lot of people who had, you know, who were upset about the job description and who wanted to see the museum do more said, okay, it's a start. And so did they do enough? I think that answer will depend on, you know, of course, who you ask and at what point you ask it. And as, you know, time goes on, how they enact, you know, what they set out in this this action plan. So I think that question remains to be seen because they're still at the beginning of it.
Mm-hmm. So we'll just have to sort of watch and see how that situation plays out. Well, as we get ready to wrap up, can you tell us what else Hoosiers can expect this summer in terms of performing arts events?
There are several. I would say, in the list that I wrote, I would definitely, keep following the Hi-Fi, the Mousetrap. They have, some kind of pop-up events. Indianapolis Opera is about done, probably selling tickets for their, for Madame Butterfly. There are some others, drive-in theater for Actors Theater of Indiana was so popular last year that, they're having people, drive their cars back in and, listen to the founders and special guests sing, which is always a treat. And so they have, I think, three this summer, I believe. So they would be, somebody to follow. One of the wildest, I'd say, and most creative spots is Healer, which is kind of a Southeast Side interactive art space and venue, and it's housed in a former medical office building. And they put an art park out back with like two RVs that they sort of turned into these really cool art installations. And they have some things that they're programming over the summer. So I would kind of, follow your favorite, definitely check out our list and also follow your favorite groups, because I think almost everybody, if not everybody, is either doing something right now or about to do something.
Right. And I think the pandemic also spawned a lot of creativity and new ways to see things and enjoy them. So it's a really cool time.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate having you on. Domenica Bongiovanni, arts and creativity reporter for the Indy Star.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And now we're going to move forward with two other guests. We're going to hear from them. They're immersed in the art scene and learn more about what the impact the global pandemic had on their work, how they're planning to move forward as more people get vaccinated and restrictions ease up. As always, you can reach out to us with questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. You can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app. It's called All in Vox Pop. Just search for All in Vox Pop on your phone's app store. With us now are Shannon Forsell, Artistic Director for the Cabaret in Indianapolis, and Raquel Lopez, Executive Director of Civic Theater of Greater Lafayette. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Shannon, I'll start with you. For listeners unfamiliar with the Cabaret, what can you tell us about the organization and your venue?
Yeah, we've been around as the Cabaret for 12 years now. And 2 years ago, we were so thrilled to move into our own space. So we have our own venue now at 9th and Pennsylvania. And it's an award-winning venue. And we were really on a roll selling out all of our performances before the pandemic hit. So we are excited to be reopening in that space in August. And so what the Cabaret is, a little bit for those that don't know what Cabaret is we present world-class performers in an intimate space. So we have only 200 seats, and we present a lot of Broadway stars doing their one-person shows, international performers doing their cabaret shows, and local performers as well. It's a little bit of a cross between a nightclub and theater, because you can also have beverages and eat before the show as well.
Okay, nice. I guess that's a great summary of it, because when you say cabaret, I just think of people in a musical.
Right. The movie.
Right. That's where my mind goes. But what was it like, though? You mentioned you were selling things, and then the pandemic happened. How did that hit you guys?
Well, basically, it hit us just like everyone else. So we immediately went into shutdown mode, as it became very, very clear that no one was going to be going anywhere for quite a long time. And so we went into hibernation mode from March 8th until this year. And it's interesting, because it's easier for arts organizations to completely shut down in some ways than what it will be for a lot of arts organizations this year to reopen at smaller capacities, because you can get rid of all the expenses, many of the expenses. Whereas when now that we're all reopening with a smaller capacity, this year I think will actually be a little bit more challenging for many arts organizations than last year was.
That's an interesting point. Raquel, can you tell us about the Civic Theater of Greater Lafayette? What is important about spaces like yours, and what is the role you play?
Sure. Well, Civic Theater of Greater Lafayette has been in existence now. We're celebrating our 90th season this year. So, and somehow we have been the only community theater in Lafayette for 90 years. So that's disheartening, in my opinion. But we take that role very seriously. So our motto here is see yourself here. And we are trying to be something for everyone in our community. And that has been pretty much my mission since I started this job in January 2018. So we think we play a very important part in our community. We have affordable theater, but at a very, even though it's community theater and non-professional, we do our best to make it the most professional experience for our audience goers. So,
and similar to what I asked Shannon, I'm curious for your organization, when the pandemic hit, how did that affect you? Did it affect you guys pretty hard?
Oh, extremely hard. If you would have told me you will be shut down for 15 months, I would have said, okay, that's not possible. There's no way we're going to be able to do this. I mean, it was really a month to month type of an existence where every month the board, we would all, you know, meet virtually and say, okay, how are we going to get through this month? How are we going to do this? And we're thankful for our amazing donors, and obviously we have a lot of very loyal patrons since we've been around for so long, but also the loans and, you know, PPP and grants that I've been pretty much has been my existence this whole last year. It's been all I've been doing. Thankfully for all of that, we were able to make it. But yeah, it hit us tremendously hard. We were kind of living on a show-to-show basis. I mean, we had not yet, we were just starting to get that momentum where we were going to start putting some things away a little bit to where we were going to make plans. We had a strategic plan, of course, that we came up with just literally 6 months before COVID hit. So that's all been backburnered for right now.
Yeah. I mean, that must be super intense to have to like move from being in your zone to suddenly like, nope, stop everything and drop.
Yeah,
it.
To stop everything. Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so did you have to do anything innovative in 2020 to stay afloat?
Sure, we did. We came up with, we did do a virtual thing. We did a called Natural Distancing. It was kind of a variety show that we streamed and we made available video over our website. And that was okay. I think by the time we got that out, it was like August, September, people were already kind of over the streaming thing. So it wasn't great. But at the end of September, we did an outdoor called Stand Up for Civic performance. It was stand up comedy on our parking lot. And that was tremendously successful. We made 4 times the amount of what we made over streaming. So it was, and it cost us zero because it was just, you know, amateurs getting up and doing stand up. But it was great. Everybody was just so excited to be, I think, again, live theater, live performance. That's what we do here. We're not,
right.
we're not virtual. We're not video. So.
Right. And Shannon, similar to for you, did you have to do innovative things last year?
Absolutely. You know, we early on, did a large survey, and we kind of did that several times throughout the process with our audience, and quickly discovered that our audience in general was not a huge fan of the streaming. And many said, we just want to wait until we can come and be live. So that gave us some direction that might not be the top focus for us. Additionally, music rights to be able to present virtual performances are very complex when you're doing a lot of different songs within a show, because you have to get the rights to every single song from every single person that owns that song in advance. So the immense amount of time, the time problem that that creates is an interesting thing. So we chose to, and our folks just said, we want the magic of the experience. So what we had the good fortune to do was we had all of our performances archived. So we began to put all of our performances, various songs from all of our performances, and curate those with the national artists we've presented, and populate our YouTube page with performances that you could see in small bites. Because we also learned that during the pandemic, folks didn't really want to sit for a long amount of time. We just didn't have it in us, you know, and we were on computers and Zoom all day. And so they wanted snippets and bites and things to inspire at when they could do that on their own time, rather than at 8 o'clock on Friday, everyone has to get on at this time. So we populated that with over 500 archived performance videos. And so we gained an audience from that of over 2 million people watched those videos. So that was one of the ways we utilized that platform versus just presenting streaming. We did present several cabarets in a streamed performance with students, which went really well. And we presented all of our educational programming online. And that the educational things were very successful in an online platform. So we were able to continue all of that and actually expand a lot of that and expand our audiences for those while we waited to present our shows. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, I definitely want to talk more about that when we come back after a quick break. We're talking with Indiana arts leaders about what their audiences can expect this summer and fall. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soeb. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. Today we're discussing the future of performing arts in Indiana, talking about pandemic survival stories from Indiana arts leaders, and looking ahead to what the future may hold. If you've missed out on live performances, they're slowly making a comeback, and theaters and organizations are trying to get back on their feet after a long year. If you have questions or comments, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. With us again are Shannon Forsell, Artistic Director for the Cabaret in Indianapolis, and Raquel Lopez, Executive Director of the Civic Theater of Greater Lafayette. Raquel, if you compare to last year, how has 2021 been so far?
2021 so far, compared to 2020, if you're saying it the same quarter, our first quarter of 2020 was amazing. Right around, it was mid-March when it all obviously came to the halt. But so far this year, I would say our momentum is fabulous. I think we have not only our staff, our volunteers, our board, everyone is so motivated to get back and to get busy. And I think our community is feeling the same way. So I would say we have the equal energy happening that we had at the beginning of 2020. We are now at 2021. So I'm hoping that continues and that we are able to give the public what I think we're all in great need of, which is some live theater. Mm-hmm.
And Shannon, how about you? How has this year been so far compared to the pandemic lockdown style?
Yeah, this year obviously is filled with a great deal of hope. It's really nice to know that there's a light at the end of the tunnel here. Whereas, you know, in 2020, no one had any idea, how long are we going to be in this situation? When will we ever be able to reopen? And so the sense that we at least have some ideas of with the vaccine, that's made obviously a huge difference. So folks can begin to make plans, whereas before it was just a month to month, what should we do next? You know, we had a big celebration at the office last week because we have a season. We have a plan for the season, and we have opening dates, and we're going to announce what we're doing. And that was so exciting. Oh my God, we actually are booking shows, which is, you know, what we do. So to be able to announce those to the audience, which we're going to start doing next week, has just been such a sense of relief and joy that we can start to bring this all back and give folks what they've been missing for so, so long. And that includes us too.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you're going to start announcing shows. When did you get to be able to start booking them?
So we started to work on that as we started to have a sense that of the vaccine, you know, when it was clear that Indiana, especially when Indiana was starting to be able to open it up to all adults, and we kind of had a timeline, we said, okay, we feel like we can do this. We can set some dates. So we started planning it obviously early in the year, and each year, each month we would be like, okay, this is the month we'll open. Okay, no, this is the month we'll open. You know, so we were planning it, and all the artists were basically on hold, and we were just saying, we know we're going to book you. Then we finally had dates where we could say, now these are the dates we have available. So it was a tentative until we had a better sense of, because we know when we have to reopen, we still have to be very safe, and folks have to know when they come back and feel comfortable being back. It's a huge commitment that we have to make to be sure that when they do come back, that they feel safe with us. And that takes an immense amount of work we want to do, because we want people to be able to feel good when they're sitting in the room.
Mm-hmm. And is that something
you've been in such a dangerous business, you know?
Right.
Being one of the most dangerous things you could be attending. So we want to make them feel good about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you said that, because I was going to ask you a question. I was like, well, this sound weird if I say you have a dangerous job.
Yes. Yeah. We're like, wow, we never thought cabaret would be dangerous. Yeah. You know, so for us, that's one of the first things that we were doing. All of our artists have committed to being fully vaccinated before they come to the stage, because that, you know, in a small room, especially a small intimate room, what used to be the most amazing thing about the cabaret is to see an amazing talent right in front of your face. Well, that's no longer as enticing as it was last, you know, before 2020. So we don't want those to be like the SeaWorld splash seats, you know, for COVID. So we've been working on all the ways that folks, we aren't at the point of saying everyone has to be vaccinated, but all the artists for sure will be vaccinated, so that folks can feel a little still comfortable being close to those amazing people.
Mm-hmm. Raquel, are you doing any measures like that?
Yes, actually we have our season reveal coming up on May 22nd outside, but the entire cast that is involved in that performance has been vaccinated, as well as the crew and all of the musicians. So, you know, it's one of those things, I kind of, long lines with Shannon, we don't really even have to ask. We have, everyone is just stepping up and wanting to, knowing that this is, I mean, the least we can do, right? And and to make each other feel safe, our patrons feel safe. So yeah, that is, it's wonderful, because it's just, it's a wonderful group that we all work with, that we know, we have that understanding, and everyone has that same respect for each other. So it's great.
Is it tough though to have to balance, you know, being in the artistic field, but then now you have to be like a semi-medical expert, you know?
Yeah. Which I am in no way a medical expert, but yeah, it is tough. It is tough. Thankfully, being a community theater, I'm part of a lot of community theater organizations and directors groups, and you know, so I've taken a lot of cues from my colleagues throughout the country, really. But yes, I in no way, and I as I'm sure Shannon does, we rely on the CDC guidelines as well. So that's, you know, that's very important to have their input.
Right. And Shannon, how has that been for you, trying to balance, you know, making sure people are doing the right thing, and then also just your job?
Right? Yeah, for all of us, especially with the ever-changing rules, because we have 5 pages of safety protocols, for all of our things. So, each really weekly, those kind of get updated these days, and they will continue to be updated as guidelines begin to change. So we just really, luckily, the Arts Council of Indianapolis has been an amazing resource. In addition, to help keep us aware, we meet every other week, and they help kind of also help keep the arts community aware of, here's what's new, keep your eye on this. So there's a great opportunity for us to pool our resources of knowledge for some best practices and all of that. But yeah, we've all learned a lot more about technology and safety protocols than we ever wanted or will want to know again. My technology skills have become amazing, which my younger staff is pleased about. So, yeah.
Yeah, I always joke. I'm like, now I can go into IT. I know a lot of things. Yeah. My backup plan. So I'm curious, have any of you heard from audiences that are hesitant? Like, they're really excited that this is all coming back, but they're just not ready. Even if everyone's vaccinated, they're like, no, I still just want to watch it from my computer.
I haven't yet, but like I said, we're going to announce on the 22nd, and then we may start hearing some of that. I haven't heard that yet. Everyone in our circle so far is very excited to get back. Our educational programming, we did a lot of virtual with our classes too back in 2020. We have since moved to in-person, social distance, masked, limited number, all of that. And those parents and students are just super eager to be in shows, to get things going. So really the majority of the feedback I'm getting in our community is let's get back to business. But we haven't announced yet. Haven't heard a lot from all of the patrons yet, so we'll see where that goes.
Right. Yeah, we've definitely had folks that are still leery, even those that have been vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And I think the more knowledge there is that will come out in the public about the risks of the variants and those kinds of things, and whether or not, even if you're vaccinated, you can get someone else sick. I think just because there's not as much information about that you still have some risk. And that's of question. And I think people just need to get used to it again. We've gone from being with only one or two people in our own home to then putting our toe in the water. So it's going to take some time. I mean, folks are just kind of emerging from the winter, first of all. So I think even if you feel safe, I know the first time Dave and I, my husband, went to a restaurant, it's been ingrained in you to be nervous. So right. I think some of it's going to be getting used to it again and having enough experiences where it's safe for you. That's where it's on us to be sure that we do what we can to give them a feeling of as much safety as we can.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting transition to go back to being a human again and interacting with other humans.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I mean, my kids are probably super embarrassed for me because I'll go out and I'm like, I'm sorry, I haven't been around people. I'm not sure, like, should I stand here? They're like, stop it.
Right. Yeah. So you're trying to get used to 10 or 20 people, let alone like 100, So it's true. I'll just have to get used to it again.
Right. I know. I've been hearing
my current speech I'm really nervous about at this point.
Well, I've been hearing some arts places or events have been giving incentives to folks who are vaccinated. Like, if you're vaccinated, you can come in. Do you see that being the future of arts in Indiana, or is that just taking it a step too far?
That's a tough question. And we've had this discussion. In fact, it's on our agenda for my executive meeting tomorrow night. We're not sure how to handle that. And it's a little, again, it's nerve wracking. It's tough you're talking about showing proof, right?
Is that right? Right. Or just maybe even if it's just an incentive, like if you do have proof, maybe you come for free or something to get folks
right
excited.
Yeah. And that to me, that makes more sense. Like something like that. Incentives is a great idea. But yeah, this is up for discussion this week for us and how we may start to handle that in the future, because mm-hmm. we haven't had to yet. I mean, we have really just been shut down, so we haven't right. had any performances inside, so it hasn't been an issue yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, folks, we've had folks ask us, are you going to have a night, you know, some nights there for all the people are vaccinated? You know, that's a really, as you can guess, that is a tricky can of worms. So, you know, because there are so many, you know, political feelings about it, health feelings about it. And I think, you know, we receive public money too. So being accessible is an important piece of that. Also, the logistics of trying to confirm everyone has had a vaccine. And, you know, we're already seeing people forging vaccines. So there's a logistical kind of context of who handles the proof of that and ensuring the proof of it. And at the end of the day, they're really saying that folks in these settings should wear a mask even if they're vaccinated. So rather than open the can of worms, I think a lot of folks are just, you know, trying to just go the mask route first. Although I do think, it's going to take a lot of big places rather than smaller arts organizations like us to lead the way on whether or not that becomes a norm. Mm-hmm. You know, when you see states already just like forbidding you to have a vaccine passport, you know that that's going to be a tricky thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we see Broadway opening up, I think that will guide some of us too. If big entities are saying this is just the way it is, folks, that I think it would be easier for all of us to mandate those kinds of things. So we don't have a plan in the near future to mandate that. And we're trying to navigate around that particular challenge. It would certainly be much easier if everyone is vaccinated.
Right, right.
It's all it takes one person who's not. And so it doesn't really matter if 99.5% of the people are vaccinated. You know, it just takes that one person that's not, that could still make things a challenge.
Mm-hmm. And then what about, you know, as we move on to sort of talking about the benefits of live performance, what is it about seeing a show live that can't be duplicated digitally, Raquel?
Oh, well, I mean, in so many ways, so not just audience, I mean, the performers itself, the energy that is exchanged between the audience and the performer is it's everything. And it's the difference between watching something on television or a movie and then going to see something live. And anyone who's ever been to any live performance knows what I'm talking about. And I know for the performers, when we did our natural distancing that I brought up earlier, that was a streaming video thing. It was really hard. We had so many takes because people were just kind of flat and kind of not getting the energy up because there was no one in the space. And the magic that is live theater, you know, I obviously don't do this for the money. I'm a nonprofit little theater. That's it. That's what my life's been about and what our work here is about. And so, yeah, there's nothing like it. There's nothing mm-hmm. like it. And it cannot be duplicated. We are not in the business of doing video here. We are just not. So mm-hmm. can't wait to get the live theater back.
Mm-hmm. And Shannon, how do you feel about live performance versus digital?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, I watched numerous digital performances and streamed performances during the time, and I agree completely. And most everyone that I've talked to, it is completely flat without the two-way relationship between the audience. And you watch someone sing a song and then thank the crowd, and there's no applause, and you're like, oh my God, that's so bizarre. So because it's true, even we have multiple performances of the same artist, and the performance will be different every single night, depending on the energy of the audience in the room that night. And so there's a crackle in the air and an exchange between people, not even just between the performance, but even the audience that you're sitting with. Mm-hmm. There is a communal experience that happens that you cannot put your finger on. It's a crackle in the air, I call it, it creates the magic. Mm-hmm. And everyone I talk to says that there is no way that streaming will ever be able to capture that. And many times when you see a performance live and then you see it on video and you were there, you can see what I mean by that. And you say, it just wasn't the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that energy doesn't translate to the they call it the fourth wall. There's a wall between you and the artist. And our whole goal is to get rid of that wall. Well, when you do it on a screen, you've just added a whole wall between the two of you, and that, that changes it.
Yeah, it almost makes it more formal. Well, we're getting ready to wrap up. 10 seconds for you each to tell me when you are announcing your new lineup.
Okay, May 22nd. We are going to be announcing it. We're doing it. It will be, obviously, we're doing our show, but we'll be blasting it on social media and on our website, LafayetteCivic.org.
Yeah, go to thecabaret.org. We announce our alley season, the alley sessions, our outdoor performances that will be happening this summer, and then our indoor performances, which kick off with Broadway star of Hades Town, Andre DeShields, Tony Award winner. Indoor, we open in August, the first week of August.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us. Shannon Forsell, Artistic Director for the Cabaret in Indianapolis, and Raquel Lopez, Executive Director of the Civic Theater of Greater Lafayette. Join us tomorrow with guest host Jeannie Lindsay as she delves into the world of FAFSA loans. This is All In.